committee, I'm going to, there's, we have some people that have traveled quite a ways here this morning to testify, so we'll move down to Senate Bill 180, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 180. And call, let's see. Yeah, Jim is that.
Didn't anybody bring the cat of nine tails this morning?
Janet, will you go ahead and give us a rundown on the bill? And we'll have Jim Beard first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Rule Senate, Senate Bill 180, and you should have the A engrossed version that was amended in the Senate, would authorize the Department of Transportation to distribute monies from the Elderly and Disabled Special Transportation Fund. Those are kind of referred to as STP funds, to Indian tribes, and declares that Indian tribes are public transportation entities for the purposes of the bill, and it would add Indian tribes to the current list of mass transit districts and transportation districts, as well as counties that can receive money directly from the Department of Transportation. Under current law, tribes go through counties or transit districts in their area to apply for funds instead of directly to the Department of Transportation. There is a fiscal impact statement at your place as well for Senate Bill 180 that gives a description of how the funds, where the funds come from and how they're distributed, and the Department of Transportation can answer any questions about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jim. Janet. Jim, please.
I have some handouts here, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
My name is Jim Beard. I'm the planning director for the Umatilla Indian Tribes, as well as the transportation planner. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to be heard and holding this public hearing this morning. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation support Senate Bill 180. And we commend the ODOT for taking the initiative here to implement Senate Bill 770, which the state legislature says state agencies should work in a positive relationship or directly with Indian tribes on issues of mutual interest. And we have a number of them. We've got, regarding transportation, there's three state highways that run through the Indian Reservation, and we work directly with Region 5 on projects and planning efforts on that. We have a joint corridor management program with the Region 5 on management access for Highway 331. We work with ODOT on 5311, Section 5311, the public transit program. And I would also like to commend them for all the help they've given us in developing our public transportation program. The CTUIR in the last 10 years has grown tremendously. The tribes have created about 1,000 new jobs in Umatilla County and a payroll of probably some $50 to $75 million in the economy of Umatilla County. But along with that growth, that has also created some demands for some additional services. Prior to about a year ago, there was no public transportation between the community of Mission and the city of Pendleton. And basically the geography is there that the tribe's headquarter offices, their enterprises, are about 5 miles from downtown Pendleton and the Mission community, which is about half Indian people. And that is the population breakdown of the reservation, is there's about half the people that live there are Indians and about half the people are non-Indians. Prior to a year and a half ago, there was no public transportation between those two places, and Umatilla County wasn't providing transportation services. The city of Pendleton wasn't providing transportation services. The tribes got in the business because they needed to, with all the employment and additional money coming into the community, there was a demand for these services. The Tribes Transportation Program consists of a bus that we run 6 days a week. We make four round trips between Pendleton and Mission, and a subsidized taxi service where it's on demand. It's 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. People can call and have a taxi service. And most of those trips are between Pendleton and Mission, the Mission community. The we have a combination of state, federal, 5311 section, highway funds, Bureau of Indian Affairs, tribal funds, and state funds that we use to operate this program. And the users pay substantially. Someone using the taxi service, a regular rider, will pay $5 for a one-way trip, and a senior pays, seniors and disabled people pay $4 for a one-way a ride on the taxi. Our bus system is free. And in the handout there, you'll see there is a spreadsheet on the back that I think really tells the kind of the story about the growth of our program, the numbers of riders we have, how well it's and how well it is all working. Fees in our program support 10% of the program, which is very unusual in a rural area. I think the most successful program in the country is the BART system, and that provides about 25% of it is supported by fees. So our users, it's not a free ride. They pay for the taxi. And we encourage them, people, to ride the bus into town, and then when they get their groceries or whatever it is, they've done their shopping, take that, take the taxi back to the reservation. We spend about $90,000 a year of money on this program, and or actually we spend about, there's a $180,000 program. The $90,000 that we get that comes from 5311, BIA, and STF funds all goes to is a contract. It goes to Elite Taxi, which is a taxi company in the city of Pendleton. The tribes do not operate the system. We contract for it, and we share a bus with the city of Pendleton. The city of Pendleton has a bus, and we share that, and we help them with the maintenance of that bus. And we're probably about to buy another bus and put it into the system with them. You can see also the contribution that this bus system has made to the Pendleton businesses. There are people now that take the bus from Mission into Pendleton, where the only shopping is in the area. And they buy goods and services and before returning back to the reservation. So this program is putting a lot of into the local economy. We are about at the end of the program, 5311, what they call startup funds. And this is a two-year program ODOT offers that allows us to get started. And we're kind of in a research and design phase now. We're trying a mix of ridership and pricing to see what works the best. And once those funds are gone, after about one more quarter, then about half of our revenue will be gone, and we'll be looking for other sources. That's one of the reasons that we support this, is we are looking for the additional revenue that would be provided when the tribes are treated directly under Senate Bill 180, as you've required under Senate Bill 770. Right now, we receive $5,000 in STF funds. That's about 5% of our total budget. Our senior and disabled riders are almost 23% of the use of that system. Probably going to hear a lot of numbers, but I think the most important thing here is the issue regarding the relationship between the state and the tribes. As I've said, we work directly on most all programs with the Oregon Department of Transportation and have a good working relationship. And we ask you to implement it, Senate Bill 770, by approving SB 180. And at that, I will close. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Jim. Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilman.
Jim, on page 3, you allude, there's a, near as I can tell in the bill, there'd be a $40,000 minimum payment to these transit companies that the tribes establish. I think there's 12 tribes?
Nine.
Okay, there's 9 tribes. I'm concerned about the amount of money that that siphons out for other STF funding around the state.
Is that a question? Or
I guess you try to convince me that we're not going to dilute our senior and disabled transportation to other people around the state by approving this.
We don't know how many of the Indian tribes will actually use this program. None of them, and I think ODOT can probably tell you that historically some of them have shown no interest in any of the transportation programs. They're going to have to get up to speed to operate a program. This isn't something where you just take the money and you go out and you buy a bus and you run it around the city. There's in addition to the money that is we receive from the state, you have to put up equal amount of your own money too, and that means for every $40,000 we get, we're going to have
you're
to come up with $40,000 of our own money to match that.
Okay.
So these tribes are also going to have to do that. They're going to have to build a program, and they're going to have to come up with their own funds to match that program.
That helps quite a bit.
And I think that right now we're probably the have the most well-developed program, and I'm not sure that any of the others tribes. There's a couple others that are even using STF funds, and I don't believe anybody's using the 5311 funds.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Representative Greenland.
My understanding is that you can apply for money now. The issue is you apply through the counties, and currently I think 4 tribes are applying for money for this purpose through the counties. The issue here is not whether you get money or not. It's the route you take to apply for funds. Is that correct?
That's
correct.
That's the philosophical side of the argument. We want to be treated in a government-to-government relationship on this program like the tribes are in other respects with the state. And I think that's why we commend ODOT for initiating this, because they're implementing a bill that you passed 2 years ago.
Representative Dingfelder, you look like he is ready to ask a question.
Well, I just want to follow up, thank you, Mr. Chair, on something that Representative Greenlich brought up. I'm reading the second page of the fiscal report for this bill, and that's where they say, you know, that 4 federally recognized tribes are now applying for the STF funds. So that's why I don't understand why it says here that this would reduce the STF money distributed to counties and districts. So because right now, if I'm understanding this right, that money is just passed through the counties to the tribes. Is that correct? You're saying you're getting money now, but it's passed through the counties.
That's right.
And to follow up on that, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
As far as administrative costs, do you receive any funding, any money to cover your administrative costs, or is that something that the county only can receive because they're the transportation agency?
The money we receive, we use for operations. We don't receive anything for administration. We administer the program with the combination of all the monies that we have from several programs, and basically the administration comes with our own, we use our own funds for that.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
For your testimony.
Well,
excuse me, just a minute. Representative Beyer has
one. All right, thank you. And the money that you're getting from the county is a portion of the money that they're getting, a portion of the $40,000 that they're receiving. Is that accurate?
The county receives considerably more than $40,000. And I don't know what it is. I think it's maybe $140,000 or something. We received five of that.
Sorry. The follow-up. The base is $40,000, and then by population,
yes,
it raises. And so this would bring, to pass this, then it would bring an additional probably $40,000 into the county without an actual increase in population.
That's correct. There would be additional $40,000 in the total. Maybe it wouldn't be all through the county, but there would be more money to support transportation programs and support the bus system that we share jointly with the city of Pendleton and continue to make it viable.
Thank you.
Jim, does the boundaries of the Umatilla tribe all within Umatilla County, or does it lap into any other counties?
There is a small portion of it that's in Union County, but I don't think you can get there by bus.
Helicopter?
I don't think you can even get there by car.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Anything else?
Any other questions? Let's see. Could I have Lewis Pitt and Michael Mason and Roger Martin all up here at one time? Is Roger here?
No, Roger Badger isn't here.
He missed his turn.
I know what he's going to say.
They can handle it without him, I'm sure.
Oh, is he? Okay.
All
right. He'll have to speak up real loud. They're going to hear him. Man. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Louis Pitt, Jr. Good morning. We have here in support of Senate Bill 180. I was appreciating learning from the other tribe that we work with on the east side closely, the Umatillas, about some of their challenges. And again, the tribes all have different challenges. I am Director of Government Affairs and Planning of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 180, which would authorize the Oregon Transportation Department of Transportation to treat our tribes as a transit district and make funds available for the tribes from the Elderly and Disabled Special Transportation Fund. Warm Springs strongly supports this legislation. I can emphasize that with there are some elders that are in the middle of this that have been putting the heat on us to make sure that we give this as good a chance as we can here. It carries out the legislature's intent with Senate Bill 770 from last session, the bill that enacted the state tribes government-to-government process. Senate Bill 770 was meant to involve state agencies with tribes in collaborative work, and we applaud ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation, for putting it into practice with Senate Bill 180. This can give our tribes much-needed help with our elders in disabled transportation. Our reservation is split down the middle by the Wasco County Jefferson line, and of course, if you're, I'm a government guy, is that technically is that there is no county authority on reservation. There is no state authority on reservation. This is a matter of just keeping administrative understandings in situations like this, is that that being the intent to honor our sovereignty and our political integrity. Without this legislation, our tribes must beg to Jefferson or Wasco County for financial help for our seniors' transportation program. This has gotten little result in our corner of the of these counties, Jefferson and Wasco counties. Jefferson and Wasco counties have received a total of $739,000 from the Special Transportation Fund in the last 12 years. And the Warm Springs has received under 5,000 of these funds to serve the entire Warm Springs Indian Reservation. Senate Bill 180 will make this distribution fair by giving our senior programs $38,000 per year based on this year's budget. Nick Maitsky, Kip Picado. some of our elders here from Warm Springs. Senate Bill 180 will allow us to transport our elders to medical and dental appointments and to events that help preserve our languages. Some have said that our tribes should not get this money because the local counties will lose some money. They will receive slightly less money directly, but the net gain to our counties, the place, the area, will be over $30,000 because our senior program will use the money in Jefferson and Wasco counties. This bill is really about fairness to Indian people and about giving life, not just lip service, to Senate Bill 770. We urge the committee to recognize the importance as a token of the legislature's good faith and signal to the tribes that Senate Bill 770 is more than mere words. We assure you that you will hold up your end of the deal and use the, we will hold up our end of the deal and use the money wisely and well. We urge the committee to approve Senate Bill 180 and so correct inequity in elderly and disabled transportation funding and honor the government-to-government relationship. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. We've, I got my little calculator out, and it's amazing what you can do with some focus and a calculator, and worked up some information from the last 12 years, and that's what the product was that we reported in the testimony. And from that, we also came up with a chart of over the last 12 years that you could see. If you're looking back, because that's one of the, not to critique government, but I'm a government guy myself, is that when you take snapshots, as I think some folks have chose to do of the situation right now, you really don't get to see the inequity over time. And theoretically, I guess one could talk about, well, when do we get back to even? But, well, we're not asking that right now. We're just asking for Senate Bill 180. So thank you, Chair, Committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Mabry.
Louie, good to see you again.
Good morning.
Louie and I have been friends for a long time.
You selling some cars?
No, he'd never buy a car. You can ride my scooter.
That's how they stayed friends.
It's interesting to me that you picked the last 12 years to do your calculation, because that happens to be the last 12 years I was county judge in Wasco County.
Well, so, it's only one vote.
So we're on an even playing field there. It disturbs me a little bit in your remarks that you say, you know, you have to beg Wasco and Jefferson County for funds. I know for a fact, as county judge, everybody who wanted access to those funds had an application process to go to, and nobody begged. But that aside, I'm not bothered with that specifically, other than it concerns me. But my question is, have you ever applied to Wasco County for special transportation funding?
I think we've heard a no from our staff on that for a number of reasons. Number one was, I think the Senate Bill 770 of the past has been trying to encourage more of the relationship building of the process of issues of substance and relations. And so the last couple of years have been the real years that we've actually looked to our partners to see what they what they have that can service and different uses. The other side of the relationship that wasn't there was we did not have people kicking our door down coming to ask, hey, look here, we've got these dollars to help you out. And again, our staff said no, we really didn't have that kind of relationship with the counties. And so, anyway, in a relationship, it's 50-50 here, and I think we're both somewhat guilty on that. So that's the answer there, is that, again, 770 is supposed to get us to, we do meet, I think, like quarterly on transportation issues, and so this is kind of the product, one of the products of that new relationship.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So then, since you've not made application to Wasco County for funding, your statement that says begging has gotten little results is maybe not totally accurate.
Yes.
Thank you, Louie.
Any other questions? Representative Greenland.
I wasn't here last session, so I'm not familiar with 770.
Uh-oh was right. You know, just 400 more votes mm-hmm. haven't been here. But the government-to-government relationship is with county as well as with state governments?
Well,
Under that bill?
Under the bill?
Is it a state government? Well, Senate Bill 770 was yes. federal?
No.
Yes.
It's a state. It's a state legislative. It was originally an executive. Chairman?
Yes.
It was originally an executive order that came out of Kitzhaber's office that with strong urging and support from both Senate and House and the tribes. And so to get more serious about this is that some executive orders leave with the executive is we put it into the legislature, and the legislature made it long-term and then into the revised statutes. I think at the core of the question is our concern about our sovereignty. A lot of folks felt like we were watering down our sovereignty by applying to certain units that quite simply don't aren't on par with the tribe's sovereignty. That's our choice. Our choice of where we go to get funding and such is a matter of sovereignty. So if the counties have the dollars there that we would go get them, this, again, would make it more direct from the special transportation, 1 cent per gallon fund to the tribes. And that was, I think, that process itself is more in the spirit of 770.
Well, but if I may follow up, I'm trying to understand.
Okay, I'm trying. Michael, if you can help out.
My question is, did 770 apply, and I can look up the statute, although I don't have the statute reference, apply to the relationship between state agencies and the tribes, or did it also apply to relationships between county government and the tribes? Is it only state agencies and the tribe that was referenced in that?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Greenleck, Michael Mason, for the record, I'm a lobbyist for the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs, and of course worked on Senate Bill 70 and on the original executive order that proceeded from. Senate Bill 770 is about state agencies and the governor's office working with tribes. It's also the legislature's statement of policy that the state as a whole should work with tribes on a government-to-government basis. Counties are subdivisions of the state, so it doesn't specifically say counties, but the counties have no independent existence without the state, and we are talking about state funding in this instance, and making this state funding more equally available to government entities that can provide the service.
If I may follow up very briefly, and I favor the bill. That's not the issue. The issue is that under that same spirit of Senate Bill 70, then, under the notion of counties being subdivisions of the state, you would think that even if this were through the counties, the relationship between the tribe and the county would be different than between any other applicant for funds and the county. That it wouldn't be just getting in line with a bunch of applicants for the existence of county funds, even without this bill, I should think.
Well, Chair Brown and...
That is a question. I know there was no question mark at the end, but that is a question.
I understand it, Representative, as a question. And I think the difficulty that we see, and this is often true, less so in Oregon, but often true around the country with tribal relationships with local governments, that they're not treated, tribes are not treated necessarily as somebody who should move to the front of the line. And I think the reflection of the amount of money and it taking this long to even consider being able to access the SGP funds through the county is an indication of that. And if I go back, I think it's, it reflects a relationship with Jefferson County much more than with Wasco County.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I'm sure the judge in Wasco County always had the highest regard.
As a matter of fact, that is true.
We're going to try and get his vote back.
Thank you, sir.
Michael, did you have testimony that you were giving?
Just to, Chairman and members of the committee, just to say that I've been a little bit remiss in not understanding how important this bill was to the elders at Warm Springs until actually this week. And just want to reiterate to folks how important it is, and urge your yes vote. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, especially if Roger Martin is not yet in the room.
he is.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I do have a question. Now, regarding, this is what I'm trying to understand, because the tribes now receive money directly from the federal government for ICT, or Chief 21, that we call it now. Is that correct?
There is a small amount for Warm Springs. That's okay.
And I guess I'm just, I'm trying to figure out then, you know, why this was ever set up, that this money had to be routed through the counties when you already have the ability to accept federal funds directly. But maybe this was set up a long time ago when you guys, at that time, maybe the tribes weren't offering transportation services directly. I'm just trying to understand the history. And maybe ODOT can answer that.
Yep. Chair, representing Dingfelder, again, this is a government problem here with the federal dollars and the state dollars. Mm-hmm. For us, is that the two sovereigns and trying to keep them, their integrity intact and keep the peace, is that the state dollars do come from state-generated funds, and the federal dollars, and those federal dollars are dedicated very strictly for certain uses on the reservation, and one of them isn't this. So we have the same situation with the federal funding, that those dollars also get routed through another agency before they get to us, and that's one of the things we're working on a national level, too.
Thank you.
If I could just add, Chair Brown and sure, Representative Dingfelder, I mean, we're dealing with a 700,000-acre reservation with many miles of road. There's only, you know, there's the state, there's the U.S. highway that runs through that everybody's familiar with, U.S. 26, but everything else is BIA and tribal roads that have to be maintained with either tribal dollars or that ICT money. Yep. So that's where the money's going, and it's way behind. We're struggling with the Congress on that, too.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Could I have Martin Loring, please?
Good morning, Chair Brown, committee members. My name is Martin Loring, and I work as the administrator of the Public Transit Division within the Oregon Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 180 makes one modest change in the authorizing statute for the Elderly and Disabled Special Transportation Fund, which is called STF for short. We've talked about the STF before, but with the chair's permission, perhaps it would be useful to just briefly recap what that program does. Since 1985, the STF has been the state's primary means of financially supporting transportation services for Oregon's elderly and disabled residents. Excuse me. How big a program is it? The governor's balanced budget recommendation has $17.4 million in state funding for specialized transportation services for the elderly disabled in it. Now, the co-chair's budget would change the mix between general fund and other fund components of that $17.4 million, but as of this moment, the totals are $17.4 million, whether it's the governor's balanced budget recommendation or the co-chair's recommendation. Yeah, more about that later as you make these funding decisions. Of that $17.4 million, about $17 million goes out in grants of one sort or another through governing bodies, what are known as STF governing bodies around the state, 33 governing bodies serving all 36 of Oregon counties. More about that later. We take about 2% to run the program at ODOT. The rest goes out the door in grants. The composition of that state funding is roughly $17 million of that, as of today, about $7 million of that, round numbers, is general fund. The rest is other fund from a couple of sources. There's a dedicated cigarette tax, two cents a pack on the sale of cigarettes, that goes to this program. That's estimated to produce about $9.3 million in revenue during the 03-05 biennium. There's also a small piece of what is called TOF, or Transportation Operating Fund, also known as Lawnmower Fund revenues, that goes to this source. That's fuel taxes derived from non-highway, non-motorized uses, i.e., you buy a gallon of gas for your chainsaw or your rototiller or your lawnmower. That revenue is available for uses that wouldn't be allowed under the Constitution for gas tax on automobile fuel. This $17 million that's passed through is divided into two pots by statute. 75% of the money goes out, about $12 million of biennium, $6 million a year, this is done in an annual process, is allocated to 33 governing bodies covering all 36 counties on a population basis. That is, you know, if you're in a county that has 2% of the state's population, you get 2% of the money. Because a good number of Oregon's 36 counties are small and rural, when you originally approved this statute, you recognized that this at the low end, this was not fair. It takes a certain minimum number of dollars to do anything, regardless of how small a number of people you're serving. So what the statute says is that the Oregon Transportation Commission must write rules to establish a reasonable minimum per governing body. For the last 4 years, the minimum we've used is $40,000 per governing body. And the way that works, again, the 75% gets allocated by population. The other 25% is the discretionary grant fund. We move money from that discretionary grant pot to the formula pot to bring the 12 counties that wouldn't get at least $40,000 a year by virtue of their population up to that minimum. Okay? For the formula pot of money, the STF governing bodies are the key decision makers. Each of them has to appoint an advisory committee. They set local priorities for their area. They make funding decisions, and they administer those state funds that they receive for transportation purposes benefiting their elderly and disabled residents. The other 25%, or what's left of it, the discretionary grants, those funding decisions are made by ODOT with input from the STF governing bodies. Now, who are these governing bodies? Statute says currently they're one of three entities. If you live in a county in which there is located a mass transit district, TriMet, Lane Transit District, Salem Area Mass Transit District, then that mass transit district is the governing body for that county. In the case of TriMet, that's three counties. In the case of Marion and Polk, it's Salem, because it's in part of both counties. If you live in a district or in a county where there's a transportation district, another organizational entity that you've established under state law, or if there's more than one transportation district within your county, then the one that serves the largest number of people is the governing body for the STF statute. So we have a situation where you have eight districts, either mass transit or transportation districts, serving as the governing body for 10 Oregon counties. The other 26 counties, the County Board of Commissioners, is the governing body. Okay? Now, let me be clear. This proposed bill is not about the job those districts and those counties have been doing. They've been doing a great job. We have no criticism about the job they're doing. SB 180 comes out of the department's analysis of its responsibilities under Senate Bill 770, passed by the 2001 session. That bill's been codified as ORS 182, 162 through 168. Got a copy. Each state agency is required under this bill to analyze how it does its business, identify programs that affect tribes, and promote a positive government-to-government relation between the state and the tribes. Counties aren't mentioned in the statute, nor our districts, nor our cities. Our analysis of our responsibilities under the statute, right or wrong, was that the state should, that clearly the STF program is a program that affects tribal interests. They've always been eligible for the money. They have elders. They have disabled. They with transportation needs. They've always been served. But in our analysis, the appropriate government-to-government, sovereign-to-sovereign relationship between the state and federally recognized Indian tribal governments that, A, have a land base on which people live that, you know, that are elderly and disabled, for whom they're providing transportation services, is for the state to deal directly with those tribes, rather than, as the current statute requires, having the tribes deal with a political subdivision of the state, a county, or a municipal corporation of the state, a transportation district or a mass transit district. We think that what you intended was that the state should deal with tribes on a sovereign-to-sovereign, government-to-government basis. To do that, it would require that tribes be recognized as governing bodies, too, for the area and population that they serve. And that is the one and only thing that Senate Bill 180 directly would do. And as if tribes were governing bodies, they would have to appoint their own advisory committee, they would set their own priorities, and they would administer their own grants. Again, the jobs, the issue is not the job the counties have done, or districts. They do a great job. The issue for us is respecting tribal sovereignty and removing an existing statutory barrier to letting tribes control the transportation destiny of their own seniors and people with disabilities. What about cost? Some would argue, will argue, that, gosh, counties are hurting too. Yes, they are. How can we be proposing to take money away from the counties and give it to the tribes? The short answer is we're not, to any significant degree. There is not a single instance of which I'm aware where approving Senate Bill 180 would cause a city or a county or a not-for-profit provider of transportation services to stop providing existing service. Based on the population, I mean, our best guess, we'd have to work this out with the rulemaking and advisory committee, but based on the information we have currently, tribal people living on tribally controlled lands in Oregon would earn, through our population formula, something like $11,500. So even if, and our best estimate is of the 9 federally recognized tribes, maybe 4 would qualify and want to be able to participate. If each of those got the 40,000, and the 40,000 could change, but that's the number we've been using for 4 years, so let's use it in a discussion. If they got, if 4 tribes got 40,000 a year, what, that's 160 a year, 320 for the biennium, 11,500 of that would come out of the population share that would have been gone to the county in which that tribe is located. The rest of the money, the 300 and whatever thousand, would come out of the discretionary pot that nobody owns. That's a competition every 2 years for the money. So, in summary, this is a department bill supported by the Oregon Transportation Commission and the governor. We would ask that the House Transportation Committee forward Senate Bill 180 with a due pass recommendation. And if possible, we would ask further that you consider if there's any way to remove the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Senate Bill 80 does not increase state costs, and it has no impact on the general fund or lottery funds. We thank you for your consideration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on this small but important bill.
Thank you, Martin. Representative Mabry.
Thank you. For clarification, you're referring to three or four tribes taking advantage of this. The number I had heard was it might be seven. That's not necessarily important to the discussion, to my question, other than am I to understand that whether there were four or seven tribes taking advantage of this opportunity, the direct allocation would still only remain at 11,503, and the rest would be taken out of the discretionary fund. Is that correct?
Chair Brown, Representative Mabry. These are estimates. We don't know to an absolute certainty. It depends on the number of tribes and the population. But based on, if you take the current population of Oregon and divide it into the money that we had, the $17 million we allocate, you come out to $1.72 or something like that ahead. So if you pass this bill, clearly, I mean, without a question, the Umatilla tribe would want to be considered a governing body. They have a residential population base. They have a transportation program. Let's assume that we stayed with the 40,000 minimum. They would earn a certain amount of that 40,000. I don't have the tribal numbers in front of me, but my recollection is $5,000 or something would come essentially out of the 67,000 that would otherwise have gone to Umatilla County on a population basis. So the population allocation, Umatilla is over the minimum. So their allocation would go down from, you know, the high 60s to the mid 60s. Umatilla would earn, or the tribe would earn, something around 5,000 based on population, get the other 35 from the discretionary pot. So as a practical matter, the amount of formula money under the control of people living in Umatilla County for transportation services benefiting the elderly and disabled of Umatilla County, tribal and non-tribal, would increase by 35,000.
But you're not getting the gist of my conversation. I apologize. I didn't word it correctly. But in reading your written comments here, you say, according to the Bureau of Census, there are 7,089 people living on a reservation, and based upon those total living on reservations in the state of Oregon, that impact would be 11,503. So my question is, it doesn't really matter how many tribes participate as a governing body. It could be three, it could be four, it could be seven, it could be nine. But the population wouldn't change, so that formula would remain approximately there. We realize we're not dealing with exact figures.
Chair Brown,
approximately there. And the remainder of that $40,000 minimum, if that remained, would come from the discretionary fund.
Is Chair Brown, correct? Representative. Yes, sir. Sorry for my obtuseness.
No, that's okay. I didn't word it correctly. So, follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
So, then, from the discretionary funds, it's given out annually or every 2 years on a competitive basis. Is not that funding the funding that's used to replace buses and transportation vehicles on a needed basis?
Chair Brown, Representative Mabry, yes.
Okay.
And the four, again, working with the numbers in the governor's balanced budget recommendation, the 25% is in the neighborhood of $4 million for the biennium. What we do as a practical matter is we take that state funds, those state funds, and add to them a little over $12 million in federal funds that are limited to the bus replacement, and then run a discretionary program that's in the $16 million range, competitive grants, and most of the money in that is, as the representative accurately said, limited to use to capital uses. But the state dollars that are in that pot are prized because they're, as the budget people call, they're the most fungible. They could be used for operational support or just match another grant or a variety of purposes. So they're more flexible than the federal funds. But you're right. The overall discretionary grant program funds mostly capital, you know, replacing buses that wear out, et cetera.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
going to have Dennis Doherty and Bill Penhollow and Andrea Vogue, please.
Wait till the light changes.
Well, are those all relatives here? Come on.
Or folks, Roger brought.
If I could, it'd be interesting to find out where all the kids are from this morning.
They're from Corvallis, Oregon, Wesleyan Middle School.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome. Hope we don't put you to sleep.
I don't think so. Good morning, Dennis. You came down from Pendleton this morning, is that right?
Mr. Chairman, I actually live in Hermiston.
Hermiston? That's pretty close. I'm not very close. Anyway, welcome to the Capitol.
We're close, and we believe in the good neighbor policy, too. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dennis Doherty. I'm a Umatilla County Commissioner. Umatilla County has adopted a formal position opposing Senate Bill 180, and the Association of Oregon Counties has done likewise. The opposition is based on policy considerations, and the first thing I would like to do is address a couple of the things that I've picked up in the testimony so far. I heard Mr. Beard allude to a matching requirement. I hope we're clear that on this particular type of funding, there is no county matching requirement. The funds that come to us from the state are what the advisory committee has to dole out in grants. Also, wasn't aware insofar as the Umatilla County component is that Mr. Beard's focus was on the public transportation system as opposed to the elderly and senior disabled services that are funded specifically through the special transportation funding. That's all that I am here to talk about, and I'm not prepared to and don't want to address the tribe's interest in a more generic far-reaching public transportation system. That's what they want to do. I'm sure Umatilla County would be supportive. There's also been an allusion to the fact that in some of the smaller counties, they actually net out more money under the application of Senate Bill 180. But that really doesn't make any difference, at least in Umatilla County. We don't do our brother counties that way. We don't form our position on Senate Bill 180 based on the fact that countywide, including the tribes, we may net out a little better under this bill. The references to the relationships I found especially informative and interesting, and I hope that your membership and all the legislators pay some attention to that too, because counties are now doing so. We just 2 months ago in the association appointed a government-to-government committee, which will meet a week from Monday for the second time, and its task is to develop some principles for the consideration of the whole association, and those principles would include protocols, how we are, in fact, expected to relate to the tribes, because this is a growing question among our membership. I'll have a little bit more to say about that in a minute. And then, in connection with the tribes' interest in the broader transportation issues, I don't have any idea what it's like in the other counties where they have reservations, but in our county, we have almost 200 miles of county roads that we maintain on the reservation. So with that preface, I want to speak first then or next to Senate Bill 770. I've looked at Senate Bill 770, and like most legal documents, I think it is susceptible to more than one interpretation. But at the very least, I think it was a legislative expression of a desire to hear the tribes' concerns and to address their concerns in a meaningful way. Harry Truman came through Umatilla County back in 1951 on one of his famous train trips, and he said in Pendleton, he said, you know, about one of the worst things you can say about a person is that they mean well. And I think you can figure out for yourself what he meant by that, because good intentions don't always produce good outcomes or good results. So here's a bill, Senate Bill 770, that I think embraced and embodied a good and a hopeful idea. But I'm not sure it gets us to where it intends to. In the case of relationships, as I understand it, you have federal, state, local governments, and then now we're trying to figure out where the tribes fit into this. And I think what the tribes are trying to do in the Senate Bill 770 concept, and you heard Mr. Pitts say it very directly today, is bypass the counties and say, you know, they just really don't have the clout or the importance or the status or the standing that we do as a sovereign nation. So we don't want to have to relate to them. We will happily relate to the states. And if you think back a few years, it wasn't long before that that they were basically ignoring the states and saying, we as a sovereign nation only legitimately can relate to the federal sovereignty. Well, we're kind of working our way down this ladder, I think, slowly, and somewhere we'll probably get to where we need. But as we work through it, we have to think about this relationship issue very seriously. Senate Bill 180, as a policy matter, is undesirable to counties because it changes this historical relationship. And it has the tribes coming in and sharing in this funding source in a new way. As you already know from testimony, the tribes can apply to the advisory committees and the county governing bodies to get special transportation funds. Some do, apparently some don't. Some could, and apparently some haven't. But that isn't the county's fault. As Mr. Loring said, you know, the county's been doing a good job of administering this program. In our case, in Umatilla County, it's one of our best programs, and the committee that operates for purposes of reviewing grant applications in our county is very proactive. They go out and do take the message to communities. We have 12 cities, by the way, and they encourage them to apply and participate. So this idea that anybody, at least in our county, would have to come and beg for funds just isn't true. And the idea that this is a small but important bill that doesn't to any significant degree affect counties, I would contest that statement. I think that there is an inference that the tribes have been slighted by the counties. You didn't hear that from the ODOT spokesman, but you heard it from a tribal spokesman. I would contest that one, too. The adoption of Senate Bill 180 makes the tribes your constituents, not ours. It actually impedes our ability to develop a relationship with the tribes because they have no reason or incentive to try to have a relationship with us. So if it's relationships that you're interested in, then I think you need to really think this thing through well. I'm not going to speak to numbers, but I will say that there is this term that was real big a couple of years ago, let's not thin the soup. Thinning the soup is exactly what Senate Bill 180 does insofar as counties and their constituents who rely on that funding are concerned. If the counties decided to put on a full court press to bypass the state and go to the feds and say all these funding streams that are coming from the feds should come around the state and come directly to the counties because we can make better use of the money, we can make better decisions about the money, I don't think the state would take that very well. I don't think that would be in good faith in terms of the relationships that counties have with the state. So just remember that Senate Bill 180 and possibly Senate Bill 770 in its entirety really upset some historical relationships. That's part of the reason why the bill bothers the counties.
Mr. Chair, you have a question? Representative Greenlight.
It sounds like we're debating Senate Bill 770, which is no longer in existence. We're talking about the state statute now, 182164. Yeah. And that statute says a state agency should make a reasonable effort to cooperate with tribes in the development and implementation of programs of the state agencies that affect the tribes. So the question about whether the tribes are going around the counties or not isn't really what we're debating here. We're debating here whether Senate Bill 180 fairly and properly represents ODOT's effort to follow subsection 3 of 182.164. And even if the effect of that at the moment is that it tends to soup some, and that does worry me, although my reading is not much, the real question is, do you think and do the counties think that Senate Bill 180 is a fair and appropriate activity of ODOT to meet the subsection 3 of 182.164.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Greenlight, I don't personally think that it is fair, but I'm going to defer to my colleagues here to really address that question because they're more closely associated with the discussions that have been held at the AOC Legislative Committee level and League of Oregon Cities in the case of Andrew.
Wait for the answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But this relationship that is now reflected in statute, I think, is where I'm addressing my concerns now. And I think eventually that's what all of the counties as a group are going to be concerned about. And how do we, or are we even in that relationship as counties? I'm a little bit unclear on that. If we are, how do we implement it? And how does the state see our role? There has not been any consultation by ODOT with counties or by tribes with counties about this bill. Not in the development of the bill, not in the presentation of the bill. And I think it is understood that, you know, when something affects us as a political subdivision, that there would be some consultation. And that's disappointing to us. What I would like to speak for is the idea of partnership, because we always hear about it. Now, if this is a general partnership and somebody else is the managing partner, we're the silent partner, not supposed to have any thoughts or say anything, why, so be it. But if we're to have a partnership, we've got to have some consultation, which we haven't had. I think it would be the best thing that could happen for the things I'm talking about to just basically say to ODOT and say to the tribes, you know, let's go back and build this thing from the base and see where we're really trying to go with it. And at that point, if the counties know that there is no desire to have either consultation or a relationship with them, at least we'll know where we stand. We can speak accordingly. But right now, we're kind of speaking from the forest. If you think about it, you have figures, and we're still unclear on what the fiscal impacts are. Those ought to be worked out in advance. We ought to know what they are. It's kind of like if you have 36 children already and they all think they're starving, you know, are you going to adopt 9 more or 7 or 5? I think we could do a lot better job of dealing with the issues, the philosophical issues, the conceptual ones, the legal ones, and the relationship ones, if we came at this again from a totally different direction. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude on that note. And I have with me Bill Penhall from the Association of Oregon Candidates, Andrea Fogg from the League of Oregon Cities, and I'll defer to them now.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. And we'll, Bill, you want to go ahead and give yours, and then we'll open up some questions.
Okay. Consideration of your time, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Andrea. I'll go ahead. I would like to make about 4 or 5 points quickly and then hopefully leave some time for questions, because I know there will be some for us as well as Commissioner Doherty. For the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. We're here testifying on Senate Bill 180, a very important bill, a very important program, with limited resources, a situation that we seem to find ourselves in with most of our programs today, if not all of our programs, both at the state and county level. And I want to emphasize limited resources to provide a service to all the elderly and the disabled in the state of Oregon. All of your constituents, all of our county constituents. The SDF program provides many senior and disabled people across the state, particularly in rural areas, very important services. Trips to the doctor, trips to the dentist, to the pharmacy, to senior centers to recreate and fellowship with other seniors. So this is a service that helps today. And again, I emphasize it's a service that's provided really on a very limited budget, but it does provide an improved quality of life for many, many people. I appreciate Mr. Loring's comments about the fact that he feels that counties and the districts have been doing a good job. I believe we have, with a few dollars to do the program. Somehow we need to figure out a way to stretch these resources, and the state and the counties and the cities in this current economic time are launching into some uncharted waters. We don't know really what the cuts and the impacts of the cuts are going to have across the state. And so we're concerned about programs such as this, that there will be an expectation that if there are no increases in funding for a program that is increasing in cost, or there's actually a reduction in dollars for a program that's increasing in cost, that the counties out of their general funds will provide backfill for those reduced dollars. The resources are shrinking. Where we need to come together, in our opinion, is at the advisory committee level. The current law provides that each district and each county that operates an SDF program appoints a statutorily defined advisory committee to advise them on how to provide these services. We feel that's where this discussion should be, at the local level, at the county level, at the district level, trying to address services on limited dollars. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we're also faced today with a sequestration of funds for this program, which those funds, $1.8 million, have been set aside to deal with the 2001-03 budget crisis. If the forecast is $150 million over the March forecast, there's $1.8 million that will be lost to this program. Yes, we can take it out of the discretionary funds, but Mr. Chair, as Representative Mabry pointed out, these are very vital funds for transportation buses and rolling stock that provide services for these programs. And in the department's budget, they identified that their fleet is now at about a 66% fair or better condition, and it is their policy to get that up to 80% fair and better. So there's a need for those discretionary funds for capital investments. Let me just conclude by saying we have the issue of the sequestered funds, possible further reduction in this program. counties are caught up in that, as the cities are in the sequestration, because we have $3.6 million set aside in that sequestration. We won't know what happens to that money until after the May 15th forecast. Additionally, we're trying to deal with $64 million in cuts that we have shared with the state for the current fiscal year. And when those cuts are rolled up into the governor's balanced budget, we're faced with another $200 million in cuts. So my final concluding point, and I hope what you'll take away from this, is that we've got a very important service here that needs to be funded for all of our citizens across the state. We've got very limited resources to provide that. We need to maximize the use of those limited resources, and we feel that that can be accomplished by all interested parties coming together at the district or the county advisory committee level and assisting the governing bodies that have the responsibility over these funds with managing those funds to the maximum benefit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bill. Andrea?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. Today, we just want to share some of the concerns we have with Senate Bill 180. We support what you've heard from the counties in terms of how we would like to approach some resolution to these issues. As you've heard, they're very important not only to counties but to cities as well, because we apply for our funding typically through the counties. Just a couple of points. I know that you're running short on time. I would like to answer Representative Greenwick's question that he asked earlier. We are concerned with ODOT's interpretation of Senate Bill 770. We believed at the time to be a state-tribal relationship, addressing that relationship. Senate Bill 180 now brings local governments into the mix. In particular, you've heard that it seems like it would have minimal impact. We do not think the impact would be so minimal in some cases. For instance, those discretionary dollars, a $40,000 grant to a city is a very big deal, and it could mean the difference between them having a program or not having a program. In addition, what you haven't heard all the details of today are the partnerships that already exist between cities and the tribes in particular. For instance, the city of Pendleton has an agreement where the tribe uses one of their city buses. Those kind of things that we believe are working very well, and that's a relationship that we want to continue to foster between the cities and the tribes. So we would ask that you carefully consider this bill, and we would like the opportunity to come to the table and address it, because, as you heard from Commissioner Doherty, this wasn't something that we were able to give input to in the drafting and process to bring this idea forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Questions? We'll start down to Representative Greenlight.
Yeah, I really do want to state for the record first, I really support senior and disabled programs. I have my friend Lee sitting in the back who makes sure I do, and he stops every day to remind me about that. And I support them both at the for senior and disabled people of the Indian peoples as well as for the rest of the peoples of the state. And I spoke on the floor against the sequestering of money for us. DF and voted against that because I really think that was I thought that was a very inappropriate thing to do. But narrowly here, we really are talking about 182, 162, and it's very specific in requiring the state agencies to deal with the state to tribe relationships on a direct way. It doesn't say in conjunction with the counties. It doesn't say in conjunction with the cities. And the real question is this a fair, is 180 a fair response to dealing directly with the tribes but still keeping the cities and the counties in the mix? And I understand taking away a potential $350,000 or even a potential, I guess $360,000 would be the biggest potential. Here's a problem, but the real question is this what ODOT is supposed to be doing by that statute? And if it's not, that's, I mean, it seems to me that's what I'd like you to comment on. Is this an inappropriate thing for ODOT to be doing, given their responsibility under 182-162? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before I respond to that, sure.
I think there was a question embedded in there.
No, there was a question. I mean, their answer so far has been, well, this will hurt the counties, and I think, yes, it might. But still the question is, is this what ODOT is supposed to be doing and hoping to mitigate the effect on it? And I was just asking for some reaction to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, let me try to respond to that. And first, I would like to say that Senate Bill 180, I dislike the concept that it is hurting the counties, and I don't know that we wanted to communicate that point to you today. What we wanted to communicate was we have an important program here with limited resources. We have to share a responsibility in seeing that this program continues. Now, to respond or try to respond to your question about ODOT's responsibility under the codified provisions of Senate Bill 770. I believe, yes, this is a response, possibly a different response than what I would have advanced if I were in that position, or what I would have advised ODOT on if I had had the opportunity. I think it's appropriate for ODOT to say that we have a government-to-government responsibility here with the tribes. And we have a program that is providing services to a special sector of our community. We need to provide those services regardless of boundaries or city limits or reservation boundaries, whatever. We need to provide those services as equally and with as much accessibility as possible to all the citizens of the state. Counties, you have a responsibility to hear the concerns of the tribes about senior and disabled transportation needs, just as you do other members of your community. But by the same token, I think ODOT should be telling the tribes that the place that they need to intervene in this whole issue is at the advisory committee level. Because if we start breaking this fund apart into more and more units, we're going to lose the benefit of the aggregating of the need at the county level. I hope that is responsive, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlit, to your question.
Thank you.
Representative Mabry.
Commissioner Doherty, earlier in the testimony from the Umatilla Tribes, a comment was made that they didn't know how much Umatilla County received. It could be $140,000. I doubt that's true. Do you have a number?
Use that number you gave. Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mabry, the Umatilla County allocation is $131,000 and change.
It is? Okay.
That's combined discretionary and that's mm-hmm. per capita distribution.
You get a lot more money than Wasco County does.
Well, we deserve it.
May I make a comment, or is that inappropriate?
No, it's
appropriate. I guess I would like to comment, if I may, and first maybe answer Representative Greenlick's question. I think this is an appropriate issue for ODOT to look into, and I think personally that they're to be commended for looking into it. I think it's something that does need to be addressed. I think that Mr. Pitt makes a very good point in that Wasco County has received a lot of funds over the last 12 years, and the tribes have not. I think he makes a somewhat lesser point that that Wasco County hasn't done the outreach that they should have had. But nonetheless, the guilty is charged. We haven't done the outreach that we perhaps should have. But I think I also make the point that they were free to apply and would have been considered as good applicants. So I think what this points out is maybe that there's a problem here. There might be a tendency to say, well, with only 7,000 tribal members in the state of Oregon, maybe the total of tribes ought to be treated like one county in terms of funding. I think the issue here maybe is that if we had a lot of money, we wouldn't have an issue. We'd just do it. And we don't have a lot of money. So there could be a tendency to say, well, there's 7,000 tribal members in the state of Oregon, so treat the tribal members as one county and give them that kind of funding. The downside of that is we've recognized that there's minimum levels of funding for particularly small rural counties, because we recognize the distances people have to drive in the small number of counties, and so why should Wheeler County, with say 1,700-1,800 people, be treated better than 7,000 tribal members? And so that's an issue. That's a question. Tribals members typically are small and rural as well. On the other hand, I don't think it's out of line to say that a tribe that could apply, that maybe has a couple hundred members, ought to be bought a Cadillac to drive their members around in. And I don't think the tribes would like to see that happen as well. So I think what's been brought forward here is some real legitimate and good issues that deserve answering. I'm not sure that Senate Bill 180 answers them. But I think it's a big start. I guess I just commend ODOT for opening the issue. I'm not sure how I could vote on this issue.
Is there any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I have Roger Martin, please?
He found his way.
Good morning, Roger.
Chairman and members of the committee, I apologize. I'm suffering from my...
I called for you earlier, but you couldn't hear me clear out on State Street. You know.
And I'm now going to reward the city of Salem with a parking ticket because I didn't have any coins in my pocket. Mr. Chairman, I'm suffering from my annual sinus infection, so I appreciate if you'll tolerate my hoarseness. There's been a lot of information given to you, and I'm here to, first of all, I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. I'd like to bring some perspective to this because you've heard so many facts and figures, you're probably all confused. The counties who have just testified represent about $1.5 million of the receipts of this fund. The transportation and transit districts that I represent received $3.8 million worth of this fund, and we have endorsed Senate Bill 180 and urge you to pass it. We had a long discussion last summer. Now, you would think from listening to the cities and counties they knew nothing about Senate Bill 180. Senate Bill 180 was developed in conjunction with the Public Transportation Advisory Committee, which is an advisory committee to the Oregon Transportation Commission, has two county commission members. The cities were invited to attend and they declined. So if the cities didn't know about it, I'm sorry, but they decided not to be part of the group that developed the bill. I get a little upset with some of the inferences that are going on here because we had a long, drawn-out discussion last July, the Oregon Transit Association, because we did participate in the committee. We knew the bill was coming. We had some members that were really upset about it, and we talked a lot. We figured out exactly what happens. Umatilla County that we're talking about, and I think I could fairly say you haven't heard from any other county besides Umatilla County. There's obviously a beef going on with Umatilla County and the tribe that I do represent, the Confederate Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. I'm sorry about that. I've got copies of letters that were sent to or given to Senate members. Maybe you've received them, too, when the bill was over there. They're all addressed from the local cities to the chair of the STF Advisory Committee. And I would suggest to you, Mr. Reynolds, who's the chair of the Umatilla Advisory Committee, is probably the guy that doesn't want this to change. Because unlike what the commissioner just told you of all the cooperation, we get invited once a year to make an appearance, we, the tribe, before the STF Advisory Committee. And last year, that dear, wonderful cooperative committee fined the tribe 10% of their grant for failing to put in a report, in their opinion, on a timely manner. They happen to require reports on a different basis, a different time pattern, than the Department of Transportation. So I think you got a little local beef going on. When we voted in our committee on the Oregon Transit Association board, two members, one from Tillamook and one from Klamath Falls, voted no. All the rest supported it. The larger systems in this state, TriMet, Multnomah County, Washington County, Lane County, Marion County, all receive their money through the local transportation entity. In Marion County, it's through the Salem Area Transportation District. Who unanimously support the idea of Senate Bill 180. All of you folks voted, who were in the legislature 2 years ago on that statute that now all the state agencies are supposed to operate under, treating tribes in a equal manner. I'm sorry if Umatilla County can't get along, and I'm going to recommend to the tribe we work harder on that cooperation. But they weren't blindsided, and I think they've given you some figures that distort what's going on. Umatilla County gets, according to the figures from, gets $46,000, excuse me, I want to make sure I'm reading this right, $126,000 a year. I would suggest to you that if this bill passes, the county in total will get closer to $150,000 or $60,000 if the tribe gets their $40,000. That is the minimum under this. And if the Confederated Tribes and the Umatilla Indian Reservation receive that $40,000, first thing they're going to do is buy another bus and partner with the city of Pendleton, who they're already in total cooperation with. So I would encourage you to pass the bill. I think there's a lot going on that has nothing to do with the actual distribution of the funds. And I would encourage you to please act positively on it. And Mr. Chairman, I would encourage you to take the referral to Ways and Means off, because it's got no reason to go to the Ways and Means Committee. I think they've got some other issues to work on this session that directly affect the general fund.
Thank you, Roger, for your testimony. Is there any questions? Seeing none, I guess you're off the hook. And committee, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 180. And is there anyone here that's here to testify on Senate Bill 471? Just to let them know that we're going to, that'll be carried over to a Monday agenda. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 83 to take some testimony and introduce an amendment. Jim, would you like to come forward, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Whitty with ODOT, representing the Road User Fee Task Force. I believe you have an amendment before you, Senate Bill 83-A3, which basically changed one word from the dash two, as we talked about last time. The word facilitate is now allows, at the request of Representative Greenlick. And I think this is a fine change, and I urge your adoption of this amendment into the bill.
Thank you, Jim. Is there any question on the amendment? Seeing none, I guess not. Thank you, Jim. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 83A. We'll wait until. And open a public hearing on Senate Bill 183. And Janet, you want to...
It's not fair to have 83 and 183 in the same day.
Yeah, I get confused.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also Senate Bill 180. I've been confused on all three bills all week, so I cannot keep them straight either. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 183 is was introduced as the request of the Department of Transportation and consolidates speed limit statutes, rearranges some, eliminates others. The department is ready to go through the bill either section by section or as a concept under the bill. The substantive change that's in the bill is that basic rule speeds on the 55 mile an hour stretches that are urban interstates would go to speed limits instead of basic rule, because the entire interstate under the bill is under speed limits, and those are the only sections on the freeways now that are basic rule. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. You have a minimal fiscal impact that did have a fiscal impact coming out of the Senate. There were some studies that were assumed by the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department of Transportation that needed to be done, speed studies, and evidently those either do not need to be done or fewer of them need to be done, so that the bill now has a minimal fiscal impact. It still has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. And the only other thing I wanted to point out is that non-interstate rural state highways outside of city limits would remain basic speed rule under the bill. So it's a cleanup except for that one substantive change pretty much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Do we have a witness? Troy, please.
I'm getting tired hearing from Troy all the time.
Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Troy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales, the administrator of the Transportation Safety Division.
Troy, I don't think the fact that everybody got up next to the room has anything to do with the subject.
Well, I think it does.
They may have heard him before. I'm believing right now. I don't blame her.
No offense taken.
Okay, we'll start over again.
That's fine. Well, good morning. Start off with Janet did a good job of explaining what this bill is about. I apologize for the multiple pages of testimony that you are handed, because one bottom line to what this bill is about, it contains no policy negotiations. It is trying to clean up, very much like what you've debated before on some of the equipment standards and things, clean up our speed law. The principles of what we were trying to do, first and foremost, was remove any of the language in our current speed law that no longer applies. In 1995, Congress changed and deleted the federal maximum speed limit. Well, that then put our state statute for speed law out of alignment, because, and still today, our statute refers to and identifies an offense of violating the federal maximum speed limit. It does not exist. And in the first page of my testimony, I comment for you, for the last 6 years, we're on average about 10,000 people a year are being convicted in court of violating the federal maximum speed limit when that doesn't exist. So what we're trying to do first and foremost is eliminate that reference, because it doesn't need to be there. Second, there is an extreme amount of confusion on drivers, by engineers, by enforcement, and by courts about when are you in an urban area and when are you in a rural area. And I'll try it. Current law says this, and that is that you are in an urban area when you are in the urban growth boundary of a county that has a population of over 100,000. Not a city limit, not transportation boundary, but an urban growth boundary only in those counties that are over 100,000. How do you know as a driver when you are in an urban growth boundary, first? Second, how do you know when you're in a county that's over 100,000? Second, what we're trying to do with this bill is basically say city limit or not. The second piece that we tried to do is, and have successfully done in this bill, is retain all those special designations. The work zone area, the school zone area, alleys, other places that you as a legislative body have identified as special areas in statute to call attention to set a special limit or number, or in some cases double fines, associate that together. This bill leaves all of those things together. What we're trying to do is make this consistent for drivers, consistent for law enforcement, consistent for the courts, and consistent for the engineers, both city, county, and state, so they know what their responsibility is. It does not change the number on the sign. It's changing what would happen in relationship to the violation or the conversation in court. And it is an efficiency measure in relationship to some of the confusion about which statute do you refer to or not throughout that 25 pages of statute. It does not contain any policy level issues. We're tempted to take any or all of those potential controversial things that you've debated about and will still debate about out of here to try and make this be as close to a housekeeping bill as possible. And as Ms. Chair, as Janet pointed out, the fiscal associated with this bill has been changed since during the hearings on the Senate side, and so would just ask that the referral to Ways and Means be revisited since it no longer has the fiscal above $50,000. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would call your attention to the last two pages in the handout. The one at the top that says Senate Bill 183, Speed Law Housekeeping. This is what the bill would do. If you are inside of a city on these particular roads, there is it retains the limit, speed limit as it is today on the interstate, and the reason why you have the one gray box, that's the one change in Portland, only in these four places: Portland, Salem, Eugene, and Medford, where it's 55. So just right out here in Salem, where it's 55, that is basic rule. There's just in the few miles of road through Salem, just like the few miles of road through Eugene or through Medford. That's basic rule. In order to be consistent, the interstate, it would all be limit to match everywhere else on the interstate. 97-98% of the interstate is a limit. It's just in those small pockets that are basic rule. The second column on the far right is saying outside of a city limit, we're retaining and put it in this bill, basic rule, which is what the law of the land on those roads today retains all of that basic rule. The last page is what the current law is. And you can see all the different variations and back and forth, and that's when you're getting into the urban growth boundary, in and out. This is what we're trying to eliminate, this confusion of what piece are you under, what piece are you trying to deal with. Mr. Chair, there's representative from state police here as well, in case your questions start to get into some of the aspects of from the law enforcement perspective on this particular bill. With that, I will close and be happy to try and answer any of your questions.
This, Troy, this is just dealing with the interstate then?
Mr. Chair, no, it's dealing with all statewide. The one thing that does change is the interstate in Portland, Salem, Eugene, and Medford, which is currently right now basic rule, would be limit just like the rest of the interstate is in the state.
So it looks like this would do away with the basic rule almost everywhere, huh?
No,
it keeps it inside the city limit. It's always maximum. Outside the city limit, it's always basic rule, except on the interstates where it's always maximum. Right? Is that what you have in there?
Ms. Chair, and Resident Greenlee, that's correct.
Any questions?
And Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see you simplify them and take out these laws. My question is, did the past representatives and legislators make these rules, or were these administrative rules? How did they get in the book in the first place for all of them? Guys dream them up, or did...
Mr. Chairman, and Representative's Honor, the speed law is set by the legislative body. And it's been something since the early 80s that's been slowly layered and twisted and turned, and right now is in and throughout 25 pages of statute, which is why it's so complicated to have conversations about the speed lots, a bowl of spaghetti.
You wonder what they were smoking or drinking, don't you? Thank you. Thank
one
you,
thing
Mr.
Chair. Now you start rambling.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that was all we had.
Sir, just one thing to say.
Janet?
Mr. Chair, there is an amendment to this bill coming from Legislative Council that needs a conflict amendment because of the school speed zone bill that's already passed both houses. We do conflict amendments where two bills that are in the second chamber are both amending the same section of law. Council needs to draft conflict amendments so that they both can pass and both take effect. So, and they will either be ready Monday or Wednesday next week. So.
Okay, thank you. Any comments?
Can we move the thing or not?
Nope. We're opposed to the public hearing on the bill on 83.
Is that true even if both of them are?
And is there any other business? Committee? Not. We are adjourned.